London seems to sprawl forever. But when you see the city as a collection of colorful neighborhoods, that sprawl is actually what makes exploring London such a rewarding adventure. The 2012 Olympics gave the city a chance to re-energize an industrial zone over in the city's East End. And now, that working-class neighborhood is turning into one of the trendiest spots for artists, young adults, immigrants, and hipsters. Joining us right now from London to tell us what's making the city's East End come alive is travel writer Will Hyde. Will, thanks for joining us.
That's quite all right, thank you.
So what's the news in London? Where are things moving? What's happening? What should a tourist know if they want to get beyond Big Ben?
Well, I think if it's your first time in London and, you know, you want to check off all the major sites, then, you know, they're all there still. You'll be glad to know. But if you're a second-time visitor or you want to see a slightly grungier but trendier bit of London, then head east. A lot of London, I think, certainly in terms of stores and shops, the rents have got so much that a lot of downtown London is very samey, not just in terms of stores that you would have in the States anyway, but it's very generic stores that we get all over Britain. And there's been a movement recently to the east of London where it's still the one part of town where rents are low enough that there's still some individuality and you can get some one-off shops and mm-hmm. centered on a place called Redchurch Street, I think is the main focal point of that, which is near Old Street Tube Station.
Okay, what is the name of the street again?
Redchurch Street. Redchurch.
And what is the tube stop?
The nearest one there is Old Street. And there's also a new East London Overground line that's been opened about a year or slightly longer. And there's a stop there called Shoreditch High Street, and that would get you straight into the heart of things.
See, this is so important to be able to know what's emerging, because as you said, I love that term, you called it samey. Things feel samey, and I noticed in England, probably even more so than other places, it feels like, is chains are everywhere. Even pubs are faking like they're one-offs, but if you look at it carefully, they've all got the same menu and the same formula.
Absolutely, yep. I mean, it's sad. I'm not an economist. I don't know what the answer is, but I mean...
Tough for a one-off to compete, you know. There's an economy of scale, I guess, when you have 40 pubs.
Yeah, I mean, my local high street has four Starbucks just on the one street. I mean, don't wish to slag off anyone in Seattle, but do we really need four Starbucks on one street? I don't think so.
You know, when it comes to Starbucks, it is amazing how it has taken London by storm. And
Absolutely.
It does provide a comfortable alternative to a pub. And talking about trendy and so on, I've got a theory that as things sort of ramp up to be high-powered and compete in a globalized world, you want a drug that pumps you up rather than makes you relax. And there's more cafes and coffee shops than there are pubs these days. Do you see any trend that way towards cafes, away from pubs?
I'm not sure away from pubs, but definitely. I mean, the thing is, Britain, you know, you could say that we've had coffee shops that operated back in the 1700s, but even so, we still don't really have a strong coffee drinking tradition in the same way that you do in the States, because obviously we all like a nice cup of tea. Mm-hmm. But just recently, there's been a big push by some very entrepreneurial Australians and New Zealanders who've come over, and certainly in certain parts of town, especially the East, there's lots of little coffee shops have sprung up, and the drink of choice, which has almost become a cliche in itself, if you want to, you know, have your skinny jeans and your non-ironic mustache, is the flat white, which is kind of a creamier cappuccino, which I think New Zealanders would say was invented in Wellington and Aussies would say was invented in Melbourne or Sydney. And now that's big all over London, so much so, in fact, that you can now get a flat white in all Starbucks. So they've jumped on that bandwagon.
If I want to sound really like a local, hip, sophisticated coffee drinker, I'll just go into a one-off coffee shop and order a flat white.
Get a flat white, yep, and then you're there.
What is a flat white? How is it different than a latte?
Gosh, someone, I can hear Australians listening to your show now who are reaching for the phone, but I would describe it as a stronger latte.
Mm-hmm. In this coffee shop sort of culture, are people going for muffins and cupcakes are trendy in the States and this sort of thing? What's going on in the bakery scene in London?
Well, I think a lot of these places do breakfast as well, which is good if you're visiting town, because accommodation in London, as anyone who's tried to book it recently will know, is not cheap. And one thing that does add on to that cost is if you want to have breakfast at the hotel, which generally from the breakfasts I've had in London hotels are not that standout. And so really what people are going to end up doing is probably maybe going to Starbucks, because there's one everywhere, for a muffin. Or a lot of these Aussie places do a great breakfast as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a step away from the usual fairly unhealthy English fry up of baked beans and fried eggs and sausage and bacon. And you're thinking more corn fritters and things like avocado, which certainly to a fairly unhealthy British population is an eye opener.
I'm speaking with Will Hyde, and Will's a travel writer in London. We're talking about trendy trends in London. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Cora's on the line in Eugene, Oregon. Cora, thanks for your call.
Hi, thanks. I'm going to be traveling to London with my fiancé as part of our backpacking trip this summer. And we've been looking for a hostel or somewhere to stay, but we just haven't figured out what neighborhood would be best for young couple looking to be able to, you know, go out at night and things like that, and still be able to do the sightseeing while we're there.
In terms of neighborhoods, one of my favorites is Marylebone, which is just off Oxford Street, which is the main shopping drag of London. And that's a neighborhood in the last few years that has really come on in terms of small shops, and there's some great pubs and great restaurants around there. In terms of actually staying there, though, I wouldn't say it's particularly cheap, unfortunately. But what I would say with London is, as long as, you know, you can just hop on the tube, the subway, and first things first, make sure you get yourself an Oyster card, which is the prepaid travel card. And the website for that is tfl.gov.uk. Because if you pay cash on the bus or the subway in London, the tube, it's an arm and a leg. I think one way now, a cash fare is about £4.30, which is roughly $6. And they price it so highly to try and make you get this prepaid travel card. But what they don't do is a great job of telling you that you should get it in the first place. So the point of that long-winded answer is, grab yourself an Oyster travel card and maybe stay in a different area. There's a new hotel mini chain. I think it's actually based in Malaysia. You know, the joys of globalization, called Tune, T-U-N-E. You'd say Tune, we'd say Tune. And I think you can get a double room for about £35 a night, which is what, $50? They operate on a low-cost airline basis, which is that the sooner you book, the lower price you get. And I think the more basic rooms don't even have a window, and you also have to pay for a towel. But if you just want a place to lay your head, then that's not a bad one. And there's one near King's Cross. I think there's one near Westminster. Another option I would say is, if you want a place that's got a trendy vibe around about it, there's a spot in London called Old Street, OLD Street, and there's a hotel near there called the Hoxton Hotel, and Google their website, and they have periodic £1 a night sales, which is a bit of a marketing gimmick, but on the other hand, even when that's not going on, it's a fairly low price. And I mean, if you want to visit some decent pubs and cafes and restaurants and certainly nightclubs, then that's a good place to be based, and you could just walk from your hotel to all those.
So, Cora, I would reiterate what Will is saying is, don't let your interest in visiting trendy places dictate where you're going to sleep. I think that's two different things, and the subway system is so great. And all over Europe these days, great cities are instituting these systems where you have to buy a card, and then once you pay for the card, which is a nominal fee, then you get to travel like a local for £1 or $1 or $2 a ride. And it's a way just to let the lazy tourists that don't know what's going on pay $5 or $6 a ride, who don't bother with getting that card. So wherever you are in Europe, if they have a card, just buy it. It seems a little complicated, but it's not. You just swipe it and you top it up when you need more mileage on it. And it just works really great. Have a good time, Cora.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You bet. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Will Hyde about trendy trends in London. Will, we're talking about things moving east. I'm fascinated by the whole tube system, and we all know the Circle Line and how beautiful and complete it is and so on. But if you look at the tube map now, the big tube map, there is like a whole new network emerging, just coming out of nowhere, it feels like, to the east, like a parallel system. And just from that, you can sort of derive things are definitely moving east, aren't they?
Yes, definitely. I mean, the center of it, I would say there's a street called Red Church Street, and there's lots of street art on there. You say graffiti, I say street art, and small, trendy individual shops. And to get there, yeah, you can get there on the, well, to Old Street Tube, which is the one I just mentioned, and then there's like a 10-15 minute walk. Or also, there's this new East London Overground line, which they revamped a couple of years ago. And that will drop you off at Shoreditch High Street, which you're just then about 30 seconds away from Redchurch Street. Also, if you go there, you can walk down Brick Lane, which is home to lots of curry houses, which is, you know, people in Britain say that the national dish no longer is beef, it's curry, which seems to be true.
Isn't there a place called the Curry Mile or something?
That's probably Brick Lane, yeah. When you walk down Brick Lane, there's lots of people enticing you into their shops, and there's nothing wrong with that. But just if you go a wee bit further to an area called Whitechapel, there are a few restaurants there. One of them is called Tayabs, T-A-Y-Y-A-B-S. Another is the Lahore Kebab House, and there's another one called Needoo's Grill, which is N-E-E-D-O apostrophe S grill. And those, I mean, they're cheap. Because they're owned by Muslims, you have to take your own wine or beer if you want to. But you can make an absolute meal out of the starters, delicious spicy lamb chops, if you like food from that region. And it's probably one of the best value meals you're going to have in London.
London-based travel writer Will Hyde taking us deep into London's East End right now on Travel with Rick Steves. By the way, Will blogs about his travels on his website, which has the clever name of beenthereDone.it. He's got reports and photos from recent trips to New Orleans, New York, and Cape Town. And you'll find some fun entries that he posted about East London during the Olympics in the summer of 2012. You'll find all those web links in the show details for this week's Travel with Rick Steves, and that's in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Well, just to close things up, we just have a few seconds left. I'm going to say a few words, neighborhoods. Just give me a little one-phrase description in your mind of what characterizes them. Notting Hill Gate.
Americans.
South Kensington.
French.
South Bank, all the Jubilee Walk, the South Bank of the Thames River.
Oh, that's a more difficult one. You've got me there. Very nice neighborhood. Very emerging. Used to be just a more touristy neighborhood. Now a lot more people are moving there. I like it a lot.
Soho.
Still funky, vibrant, late night. The place to sort of get a little bit tipsy and no one's ever going to know at home. So, yeah, that's the place to go for a few pints.
Gay? Soho?
Yep. Still, Old Compton Street is the heart of gay London, but it's very mixed. So everyone around there has a good time.
It's beautiful energy there, whether you're gay or straight.
Definitely, yep.
How about Brixton?
Where are we?
Brixton, madam.
Brixton, wind down the window, wind down the window. Play some dubstep, diss my heart. Hey, Brixton.
Becoming more residential, still worth an explore.
It's Caribbean culture, is that right, in Brixton?
Oh, still very much, yes, definitely.
I was mugged in Brixton 20 years ago. Is it still dangerous?
Not like it was. Okay. Not like it was.
It's trendy. I mean, if you want a sort of cutting edge...
I think people who were there 20 years ago would say it's a lot more yuppified than it was, but...
Yeah, right. How about the city? The city is the Wall Street. It's full of button-down businessmen in the day. At night, is it dead, or is there a good club scene there?
It's still pretty quiet, and especially on weekends. I mean, I think it's a good time to go down there. You can walk into the city at the weekend. There's no one around. You can go up the Monument, which is a tower that is dedicated to the Great Fire of London way back when. And then from there, you could go walk over the river and go to Borough Market on a Saturday morning.
That's
and
great.
It's a great thing to do.
And there's this magic time, I think, after work, but before people go home, when the pubs are lively with all the local professionals.
Mm.
I like that.
Absolutely.
Idea. And finally, the Docklands.
Docklands, I would say the jury is still out. People, even now, are still waiting for it to up and come. And it just hasn't quite happened. I mean, Canary Wharf is an extension of the financial center and it's buzzing during the week and probably on weeknights. But, you know, to be honest, from a tourist point of view, I personally wouldn't bother.
Kind of samey.
Kind of samey, yeah.
I got a new word. Kind of, the Docklands, by the way, are the new Manhattan of London, where all the skyscrapers are. And at the same time, there's vast underground malls and lots of samey chain restaurants that are kind of trying to feel like one-offs. Will Hyde. What an exciting opportunity to update on London. If you were going to take somebody out for a drink in one spot, an American that's going to London and they want to really feel like they've left the tourist and they're hanging out with a great local scene, where would you take them?
I would say Marylebone because it's tourist-friendly without being touristy. And you can wander around, especially in summer. You know, it's light here in London until gone 10 o'clock at night. And then in winter as well, it's got a nice cozy vibe. Two things I would say. I've got no interest in these whatsoever, but if you want a decent selection of pubs, two great websites are fanciapint.com and beerintheevening.com. And you can find all sorts of good places on there. So just go from pub to pub.
All right. Talking to you, I fancy a pint anyway. Will Hyde, thanks so much and happy travels.
Thank you very much.
You can hear more from Will Hyde about one of his favorite vacation cities, Cape Town in South Africa. He also describes an Appalachian road trip he took in search of old-time mountain music venues. And there's plenty more on Ireland, too, from Stephen McPhillamy. Search the radio archives at ricksteves.com. Willie Weir has found that the time it takes to travel by bicycle gets him close to the kindness of everyday people in the places he visits. And it lets him stock up on memorable travel experiences. Here's another dispatch from his two-wheeled travels.
Want to send an unforgettable gift that will also be a lasting travel memory? Make a birthday recording. It's cheap, well, and it's fun. Choose someone you love, that's the motivation, and make sure you travel with some sort of audio recording device. Now, while you're traveling about your own country or through some exotic land, ask people you meet along the way to sing or say or send some sort of birthday greeting. You see, most people get nervous when you put a microphone in front of their face, but if you give them a job, a purpose, they often shine. When I cycled across Canada, I decided to make a birthday tape. Yes, that's how long ago it was. For my sister-in-law, Julie, every opportunity I had, I asked folks to sing, tell a story, or just say hello. The gift was a hit, and it also ended up being an amazing way to capture some of the voices of people I'd met along the way. Your audio birthday greeting will undoubtedly include some traditional songs.
Bonne fête, Julie. Bonne fête, Julie.
Some non-traditional tunes.
West Talk, oh what happy days.
Some amazing accents.
Hi Julie, we're out here from South Africa and having a wonderful time.
How are you doing? I'm Floyd Taylor from Greenville, South Carolina.
Possibly a poem.
Frozen Dream by Shel Silverstein.
Not all birthday greetings will be from humans.
Flip, speak. Yeah, happy birthday, he says.
Instruments are always a good way to add some local flavor.
Hi, Julie. Happy birthday.
And some you'll just play over and over.
Happy birthday to you. Happy
but however your birthday tape turns out, you. It will be a valued gift happy that says you are thinking about the recipient birthday. Throughout your travels. And for you, it will remain a treasured memory of the people that you met along the way.
And goodbye. Have a good birthday.
When it's time, home we go. They throw us in the lake.
Happy birthday to you.
Willie Weir's website is willieweir.com. That's spelled W-E-I-R. His latest book of travel essays and observations is called Travels with Willie. Jennifer Wilson and her family took my advice to travel like a temporary local to a whole new level when they uprooted themselves from Iowa and actually moved to a village of 800 people, plus several bears and wild boars, in the remote mountains of Croatia. Jennifer joins us next to tell us the highs and lows of her family's year in Croatia and the fun they had on the nearby Adriatic coastline, where fast food means carving into a pig spinning on a spit. Roast pig and coastal Croatia. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves. We'll be right back.